And also with us to complete this discussion this morning, obviously privacy is a major concern for people when they're asked to detail their movements or hand over their personal information. Privacy Commissioner John Edwards has been working with the government to inform good policy when it comes to protecting people's information in any app development. John, good morning.
Maria.
What can you tell us about your involvement with the work going on to develop the app?
Well, we're connecting with our colleagues all around the world. There's an awful lot going on, so we're just trying to keep ourselves informed and provide privacy expertise into the agencies that are offering to develop solutions, policy or technological. You know, we have that privacy expertise. Often we sort of sit back a bit and critique and review, and we are consulted. But in this crisis, with the pace that things are moving at, we're kind of offering a more active sort of consultancy, in a sense.
What are the concerns? If we look at Australia, I'll give one example. A privacy impact statement of its COVID-safe app detailed the fact it was recording all digital handshakes when they were in Bluetooth signal range, not just within 1.5 metres. The digital handshake being my phone recognising your phone and that we were in proximity. Is that the kind of detail that is difficult to resolve and resolve quickly, keeping to the absolutely minimum amount of information being gathered and being stored?
Yeah, absolutely. Can I just take one step back, Catherine, because one thing we've got to remember is that we've got no evidence that any of these apps work, right? So these are being developed, they're good ideas, and smart people have come up with them, but they're not tested. This is not yet an evidence-based process. When you talk about that Bluetooth application, think of Singapore, for example. You've got a million people, you know, a fifth of the population has downloaded the app, and they were the first out. So that's been running for quite a wee while. And the information that I got last week was that enormous technological effort has led to the Singaporean authorities being able to trace six contacts that they otherwise might not have been able to catch. So it's in its infancy. The Australian app, I think, has had something like 4 million downloads, but it still doesn't work. I mean, it's not fully functional. There's problems that they're still trying to resolve. The Apple Google API, which Andrew just mentioned, that has great promise, I think, in terms of resolving some of these technological inconsistencies, but even that's not available yet. But a lot of countries are looking toward that. But just coming back to your point about the variability of signal strength and things, this is really fundamental because we've issued some very high-level principles, and the top one is it going to work? When we are evaluating these solutions, we need to be thinking about that room where registered nurses who are doing the contact tracing are sitting. Will the solution help them or will it get in the way? If you've got a Bluetooth-enabled app that hoovers up a whole lot of handshake data from outside the clinically indicated range, you're potentially dumping a whole lot of extra people to call on those contact tracers and putting more strain on that resource rather than easing that strain.
So the 1.5 metres isn't just about privacy. It's actually about whether you end up with information overload.
That's exactly right. You know, are you getting relevant information? So I guess my point is, you know, I don't even think about privacy until I think about, is it going to work? Because if it's not going to work, then we don't even need to have the conversation. If it looks like it's going to work, we say, okay, well, what are the privacy implications of that and how do we address those? There are a number of different principles that are informing these apps too. One is I think Google has taken to calling their solution exposure notification rather than contact tracing. So it's a decentralized approach that puts a message on the phone of anyone who's been exposed to someone diagnosed positive who has the app. And it doesn't upload that to a central service. The other function that these apps can perform is a memory prompt, because when that contact tracing person sits down with the infected person and has a conversation about, where have you been for the last 14 days? that can be quite difficult. So if there is a register of QR codes or Bluetooth exchanges, that might help direct the contact tracer to those locations and the like. So, you know, there's a range of different functions that these apps can perform, and I don't think we're going to find one solution for all this. I don't think there's going to be a killer app here.
All right. That all sounds like it supports starting slowly with the basics, which is what we expect to happen.
Yeah, I do think so. There's an awful lot happening in around the world. There's a protocol in Europe that's been developed called DP3T, which is an acronym for the Decentralized Proximity Patient. I can't remember what the acronym stands for. But again, it's a protocol that prioritizes privacy while enabling a device to identify close contact. And the premise that we're seeing coming out of a lot of international organizations like the OECD, my colleagues in the Global Privacy Assembly, is that the most critical determinant of uptake of this technology, you know, getting people to put it on their phones, is confidence that their privacy will be respected, protected. So if people are concerned, they won't use it. They won't upload it or download it, sorry. That's going to affect the public health efficacy of the technology.
Just finally, John, are you concerned about the rush of many developers to put out what are probably quite useful apps for businesses or construction sites rather than the pen and paper we've got there now? Are you concerned whether they are meeting the kinds of privacy and security standards you would want to see? And does there need to be some oversight of that?
Look, I am a little concerned, and I think that you know, we've got a role here. And on that first weekend when we were still in level two, we developed some guidance for hospitality businesses who had to maintain registers and logs because privacy is not necessarily the top of the mind. You know, I saw a sheet of paper on a bar counter that had everybody's name on it. Now I could take a photograph of that, and now I've had records of everybody who was in the place. You know, you can see who's there. There's email addresses. So, in the rush to meet the statutory obligation, that some operators weren't really thinking about privacy, and I think we need to make that easy for them. So, we might issue some more explicit guidelines about critical features. Making sure it's time limited, making sure the information can't be used for other purposes. You know, we saw an allegation just yesterday of a poor woman who went to a shop and entered her details into a register being kind of harassed or stalked by a staff member. Now, that's completely unacceptable, and it's going to really undermine the value of those registers if people don't feel safe using these kinds of technologies.
John, thank you. John Edwards is the Privacy Commissioner, wrapping our discussion this morning.